Now, let me begin reading here in Volume 1, Section 1. Rules of Conduct Upon Rising in the Morning. Now, this is a burden. I want you to think about this. And I want you to understand this is not in the Old Testament. These are the things that were added. This is the burden which the Jews added to the laws of God. These are the things which reject God and keep people bound in physical things to do and think of. The whole object of the code of Jewish law is to have so many things going on and so many things that you have to think about that you cannot sin. That's an utter failure. You cannot corral human nature with any kind of rule or regulation. Human nature can only be changed with the true circumcision of the heart. Now here it says, they quote Psalm 16:8, I have set the Lord always before me. Now here's their interpretation of it. Remember, this is Pharisaic doctrine. So when it says, certain of the Pharisees said, there in Acts 15, these are some of the things that they were getting at. And we will get into circumcision a little bit later. But what I want to cover here is the burden. Then we'll understand about circumcision later. Because we have to understand about Jewish proselytism versus Christian evangelizing. And there's a difference. Okay, here we go. Number one, the aforesaid is a cardinal principle in the Torah and a fundamental rule of life among the pious. For the attitude and conversation of a man when he is in the presence of the king are not the same as when he's in his own home and his among his family and his intimates. In the presence of royalty, man takes special care with his speech and demeanor to be refined and correct. How much more should a man be careful of his deeds and words, realizing that the great king, the Holy One, blessed be he, whose glory fills the whole universe, is always standing by him and observing all his doings, as it is said in scriptures. Can a man hide himself in secret places that I cannot see, says the Lord? Do I not fill heaven and earth? Bearing this in mind, he will acquire a feeling of reverence and humility, and he will be ashamed and afraid to do anything wrong. Put a guilt trip on it. And this is the opposite of what God wants. God wants you to love him. When you do and you keep his commandments, you have nothing to be ashamed of. You have nothing to be afraid of. And perfect love, as John says, cast out fear. This is a bondage. This is a yoke. Number two, a man should be conscious of the presence of God even while lying in bed. As soon as he awakes, he should acknowledge the loving kindness of the Lord, blessed be he, inasmuch as the soul, which was committed to God, faint and weary, was restored to him, renewed and refreshed, thus enabling him to serve God devoutly all day. For this is the goal of every man, as it is said, they are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Which means, every morning man is like a newborn living being. And for this we must thank God. He must thank God with all his heart. While still in bed, he should say, I thank you, O living and eternal King, who has mercifully restored my soul within me. Your faithfulness is great. One may say this prayer although his hands are yet unwashed, since the name of God is not mentioned in it. When saying this prayer, one must pause briefly between the words graciously and the word great. Now, let's look at the hand washing in the morning. Here, before we get there, here's another one. If a man is able to rise at midnight and performs midnight service, there is nothing more meritorious than this. justification by works. Now here's chapter 2, hand washing in the morning. I want you to listen very carefully to this, and I want you to know how superstitious and how ungodly that this really is, and how much of a bondage it is. And here is an ungodliness in Judaism, yet it's looked upon as being godly. You ask the question, where in all of the Old Testament does it give us these instructions? Now, one, since every man upon rising from his sleep in the morning is like a newborn creature, insofar as the worship of the Creator is concerned, he should prepare himself for worship by washing his hands out of a vessel, just as the priests used to wash their hands daily out of the wash basin before performing the service in the temple. Question, is an average person performing a duty in the temple? No. Was he required to do it? No. Were the priests required to do it? Yes. Are they priests? No. Should they do it? No. This hand washing is based upon the biblical verse, I will wash my hands in innocency, and I will compass your altar, O Lord, that I may publish with a loud voice. Now, part of this prophecy refers to Herod when he washed his hands. Part of this prophecy refers to what Jesus would do. There is another reason given by the Kabbalist. Now, the Kabbalist are mystic Jews who believe in a mystic Judaism, which is no more than demonism. And they believe in the 10 steps of the Sephirot, which is the sacred tree, which is really only a depiction of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now you see, from what I've just covered here already, you need to understand something very important. If you don't know Judaism, you don't know the problems in the New Testament. It's that simple. Now, have you ever read anything out of the Talmud? Probably not. Have you ever read anything out of the Kabbalah? Probably most of you have never heard of it. Okay? By the Kabbalist, Zohar quoted in Beth Joseph, for this morning hand washing, when a man is asleep, the holy soul departs out of his body. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that. And an unclean spirit descends upon him. Isn't that nice of God? To let your soul go out of you and send a demon upon you? This is pure demonism. When rising from sleep, the unclean spirit departs from his entire body, except from his fingers, and does not depart until one spills water upon them 3 times alternately. That's not in the Bible. That's not scriptural. This is the burden. One is not allowed to walk 4 cubits, which is 6 feet, without having his hands washed, except in cases of extreme emergency. The first garment which a male must put on is the talid katan, that is the small four-fringe garment, commonly known as the arba kanfoth, or the four-cornered garment. For one is not allowed to walk even as much as 4 cubits without having a fringe garment on. But as his hands are still unwashed, he may not say the benediction while putting it on. The ritual hand washing in the morning is performed as follows. Now notice, all of these laws and rules and regulations designed to keep you so busy thinking on them that supposedly you can't break the commandments of God. But the truth of it is, Judaism is breaking the commandments of God by doing it. And of course, Protestants don't know anything about this. They just assume that the law of Moses spoken of there by the Pharisees in Acts 15 means the first 5 books of the Bible. And they don't have a clue that it includes everything as contained in this book, the Code of Jewish Law. So you need to get it. You need to read it. You need to understand it. Here's how it was to be done. You take a cup of water with the right hand and you put it in the left. Pour some of the water upon the right hand. Take the cup back in the right hand and pour some on the left hand. This performance is repeated 3 times. It is best to pour the water over the hands as far as the wrists, but in case of emergency, it suffices if the water covers the hands up to the joints of the fingers. One must also wash his face in honor of the Creator, as it said, "For in the image of God has he made man." One must also rinse the mouth, because we must pronounce the great name in purity and cleanliness. Afterward, the hands are dried. Special care must be taken to dry the face thoroughly. Now, I could read on and on and on with all of these laws of Judaism. You go ahead and call and you get that book. You get that book so you can read it. Some of it is silly. Some of it is just downright depressing. All of it is against the commandments of God. And through doing these things, they are worshiping God in vain. And it's filled with demonic superstition. That was the burden. That was the burden that the fathers could not bear. Now here's another one. A male person must not walk as much as 4 cubits, 6 feet, or utter a single holy word while being bareheaded. Minor children, too, must be trained to cover their heads. Now, that's why the Orthodox Jews wear these silly hats, so that they may be imbued with the fear of God. As it is related in the Talmud by Rab Haman Bar Isaac, where he says, the astrologer said to the mother of Rab Haman Bar Isaac, "Your son is destined to be a thief." He would not let his mother cover his head, so she said to him, "Cover your head so that the fear of God may be upon you." Now that just strictly out of their own imagination. But notice astrologers. Mystic Judaism is into astrology. I mean, this should be a real education for you. Now, here's one that's funny. A man should be careful not to pass between 2 women, 2 dogs, or 2 swine. Nor should 2 men permit a woman, a dog, or a swine to pass between them. Now, isn't that something? Let's see if I can find some more here. Now, let me read another one. What may not be done from dawn until praying time. As soon as the day dawns. Now, pray tell, where in the scriptures do you find this? You don't. You don't. See? These are the added laws. As soon as the day dawns, that is, when the first light of the sun is seen in the east, since this is the time when prayers may begin. That's pretty close to sun worship, isn't it? That's pretty close to what they did in Egypt, wasn't it? Yes, indeed. If one had by chance prayed at that early hour, one had compiled with his duty, we are not permitted to begin any kind of work, transact any business, or start a journey until one has prayed. As it is said, righteousness shall go before him, and he shall make his footsteps a way to walk in. Righteousness means prayer. No, it doesn't. Righteousness means commandment keeping, wherein we declare the righteousness of our Creator, and only afterward are we to direct our foots on the road to our material desires. One is not allowed to eat or drink before praying, as it is said, Leviticus 19:26, "You shall not eat with blood." Now that has nothing to do with that. Total misinterpretation of the scripture. Which means that you are not to eat before you pray for your lives. Now, that's a silly interpretation. to one who eats first and drinks and then prays, the following scriptural text applies. And have cast me behind your back. Now, let's look for some more. Then it talks about putting on, you've seen how they have the, on their right hand, when they have the straps and everything, it tells about that. And then the one that goes on the forehead, and it's only to be put on when they're standing, only be taken off when they're standing, and there are benedictions and there are prayers to be done with it, and so forth. Now, let me get to the section concerning the Sabbath, because some of these concerning the Sabbath are really something. And I'm bypassing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of laws in great detail, like I've just read you. Now, before we get to the Sabbath ones, my eye just happened to fall on this. There are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of benedictions that an Orthodox Jew is to say upon doing something or seeing something and so forth. Now, here are some of them. Let me just read them to you. He's to say a benediction on seeing a great Jewish scholar distinguished for his knowledge of the Torah. One is to say the benediction, "Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has imparted of his wisdom to them that fear him." On seeing the king of any nation of the world, we are to say the benediction. Then it gives it. On seeing graves of Israelites, there's a benediction for that. On seeing an Ethiopian, a Red Indian, an albino, or a freak, a giant, or dwarf, or one who is wholly ulcerous, or one whose entire hair is matted, or an elephant, or an ape, we say, "Blessed are you, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who varies the forms of his creatures." On seeing for the first time a lame person or without hands or a blind person, one who's afflicted with leprosy or with scurves, if they have been thus afflicted from birth, we say the blessing or the benediction. On seeing a goodly tree or beautiful creatures, whether human or animal, we say a benediction. On and on and on. Minute regulations to regulate every thought, every action. God never intended that. We are free moral agents, and we are to choose. And all of it begins with choosing to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and being. Now, let me come to the section concerning the Sabbath. The principal works we are forbidden to perform on the Sabbath are already known to most of the children of Israel. Herein is given a list which comprises the works that are generally not known to be forbidden. They are common things performed in the course of our daily lives. 1. It's forbidden to do work that requires concentration before a lamp. What are they saying then? You sit there blank-minded? The rabbis have forbidden this, lest one forgets and tilts the lamp in order to bring the oil closer to the wick. I see they have these little cup lamps, and they on the edge of it they had a little lip which held a wick, and this wick went back into the oil in this little cup dish. And so one was not able to increase the light so they could see by tipping the oil up to the wick. Then he would be guilty of igniting. 2 persons, however, may read one subject out of one book, because if one will attempt to tilt it, the other will remind him. It is, however, the prevailing custom to permit studying before the light of our modern candles, in which tallow or wax firmly sticks to the wick. Nothing to say. This shows you how old this is. See, nothing to say of modern electricity today. Now, pray tell, how much labor is involved in flipping a switch? None. You expend the same energy if you scratch your nose. So see, all of this silliness, this is the burden. It is, however, the prevailing custom to permit studying before, yes, I read that, but one must make a certain mark so as to remember not to snuff off the wick. According to the view of Maimonides, the last named act is a violation of the Mosaic law. It is impermissible to snuff off the wick even through a non-Jew. Now, that's complete hocus-pocus nonsense. Number two, it's forbidden to open a door or a window opposite a burning candle lest the flame be extinguished. See, because you can't light it again. One may close the window or the door. It is forbidden to open or close the door of an oven in which a fire is burning, for by so doing, one either increases or decreases the fire. Now, that's a terrible thing to do. Number three, pouring boiling gravy over pieces of bread or matzah is forbidden. One should first pour the gravy into a dish, let it cool until it is fit to eat, then put the bread or matzah in it. But as long as the gravy is hot, even if it is already in the dish, it is forbidden to put bread or matzah in it. Number four, it's forbidden to place fruit or water on a hot stove because the water might boil and the fruit might bake. Number five, on the Sabbath, it's forbidden to store away any victuals in a wrapping, even if it would not increase its warmth. Therefore, if we remove a pot containing victuals which have been cooked or heated in it, we are forbidden to wrap it or cover it with pillars, bolsters, or the like in order to preserve its warmth. That is a burden. God never intended that. Eight, we are not permitted to handle fruit found under a tree, for it might have fallen off that very day. That would be terrible, wouldn't it? The fruit of a non-Jew might have been plucked that very day, is likewise forbidden even to be handled. Nine, on the Sabbath day, it's forbidden to take honey out of a beehive. It is likewise forbidden to crush honeycombs, even though they have been removed from the hive on Friday. Thus, if the honeycombs have not been crushed before the Sabbath, it's forbidden to use the honey from them on the Sabbath. But it is permissible to take the honey that flows from the hive. Now, you talk about straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel, in this case honey, there you have it. Here's another one. It's forbidden to squeeze fruit to make a beverage. So much for fresh orange juice. Like squeezing lemons into water to make lemonades. Make lemonade. Here's another one. If a fly has fallen into beverage or food, we must not remove the fly only, but we should take some of the food or the beverage with it. Doesn't say how much. They need to be careful, lest they are lifting a burden. Here's another one. Law forbidding construction also applies to edibles, as, for instance, making cheese or arranging fruit in a certain orderly way. So if you lay it out nicely, you're constructing. Careful, don't leave the nails in it. Might be hard to chew. Therefore, when making a salad of sliced onions, eggs, or the milt of herring, one must be careful not to arrange them systematically. Just do it in a heap. But put them on a plate at random. Here's another one. Whatever a Jew is forbidden to do on the Sabbath, it is forbidden also to have done through a non-Jew. Nevertheless, in the wintertime, since it is permissible to make a fire in the stove through a non-Jew for the purpose of heating the house, the custom prevails that the non-Jew places the cold victuals on the stove before he makes the fire. Since the intention in making the fire is not to warm the victuals or the food, but to heat the home. But the victuals should not be placed on the stove after it's heated. Now, this is utter nonsense, complete nonsensical stupidity. And yet, you know, there are even some people in the Church of God that want to go after Judaism, that want to wear the hats, that want to wear the prayer shawls, that want to wear the fringes and the phylacteries. Those are all physical things of nonsense. And what's in your heart is what counts, as we'll see later on. Now, let's look at some more. One who spills liquid on the soil where anything is apt to grow is guilty of violating the law against sowing, because the liquid accelerates the growth. Terrible. What happens if it rains on the Sabbath, folks? Is God guilty of something? Therefore, one should be careful not to eat in a garden on the Sabbath, because it's impossible to be so careful as not to spill some liquid upon the soil. Well, what if it falls on concrete? And besides, in a garden, there is a law forbidding the moving of objects, or articles, rather. Now, here's another one. It is forbidden to wipe anything with a sponge that has no handle. Stupid. It is forbidden to spit in a place where the wind will scatter the saliva. A maiden is forbidden either to make braids or take them apart on the Sabbath. But she's allowed to fix her hair with her hands. The hair must not be combed with a brush made of bristle, if it be very hard, because it's impossible not to pluck out some of the hairs. And so then you're working. But if it's not too hard, the hair may be set with it, especially if it is made for that particular purpose. Now, if water spills on a table, it is forbidden to wipe with a cloth which one values, for since it absorbs much water, one might wring it out, and wringing it out is work. If one is caught in the rain and his clothes are wet, oh, I like this one. This is really something. He may go home and remove the clothes, but he is not allowed to spread them out so that they may dry. Even if one's clothes are only moist with perspiration, he is not allowed to spread them out, certainly not in front of a fire. Even when one has wet clothes on, he's not allowed to stand in front of a fire where it is very hot. One is likewise forbidden to shake water off or from a shake off water from a garment. A costly garment for which one takes special care must not even be handled when taken off for fear that he might wring it. Here's another one. If one walks, this one is really something, and reaches a brook, one may jump over it even if it is wide. Jumping is better than the effort of walking around it. One is not permitted to cross by wading, lest he will wring his clothes after crossing. One must not walk along the sloping bank of a stream on the Sabbath, for he might slip and fall into the water, wet his clothes, and then wring them. Oh, that would be a terrible crime, wouldn't it? Okay. Now, here's another one. On the Sabbath day, it's forbidden to paint anything with dye that is not permanent. Therefore, a woman is not allowed to use rouge. When our hands are colored by fruit juice, we must not touch any garment, because thus we dye it and we are working. We are likewise forbidden to wipe a bleeding nose or a wound with a cloth. So if you have a bleeding nose, just sit there and let it drain on the Sabbath, huh? Spare me this stupidity. And I imagine that most of you never even heard of these things. Most of you didn't have a clue as to what Jesus was saying there in Mark the 7th chapter. Full well you reject the commandment of God by teaching the tradition of men. For in vain do you worship me. I'm reading you vanity of worship. This has nothing to do with God. When we come to Acts 15 and the Pharisees say the law of Moses, they mean all of this, as well as the commandments of God. Now, maybe you understand. Acts 15 is not talking about what most people think about, and it's not doing away with the law of Moses. And it's not releasing people from keeping the commandments of God. By the time we get done with that, and I might not finish it even this time, I might have to finish it next time. But you are going to know and understand without a shadow of doubt that every Protestant theologian doesn't have a clue as to what it means. And if you follow them and reject the commandments of God and reject the Sabbath and keep Sunday because of that, God is going to judge you. Now let's continue on. It's forbidden to untie any knot which may not be tied on the Sabbath. If a knot causes pain, it may be loosened by a non-Jew. Now, what? Let's just think about this for a minute. What if you get all wet, and then just by evaporation it starts drying? What if you got your necktie all wet, and it started shrinking up and choking you, and you couldn't breathe? And you couldn't find a non-Jew. What do? You die. Silliness beyond belief. Here's another one. It's forbidden to catch any living thing on the Sabbath, even a flea. But if an insect stings a person, it may be removed and thrown off, but one is not allowed to kill it because it's forbidden to kill on the Sabbath anything that possesses life. Nonsense. However, it is permissible to kill lice since they are created only by perspiration. This shows you how old these laws are. Nevertheless, those found on clothes may not be killed, but should be thrown off. Only those found on the head may be killed. Here's another one. It's forbidden to draw blood on the Sabbath, even to suck the blood of the gums. And what if you have bleeding gums? What are you supposed to do? How are you going to handle that one? Fill your mouth with gauze? No, because you're soaking. You can't do that. Likewise, it's forbidden to put plaster on a wound to draw out blood and pus. It is certainly forbidden to squeeze blood or pus from a boil. So lie there and suffer all Sabbath, huh? Let's get some more here. Now let's read some more. Some of these are, you know, we're going to read some very hilarious ones here in just a minute. It's forbidden to wind a clock on the Sabbath or on a festival eve if it's still going. It may be wound up on the second day of the festival when it is still going, only as much as is needed for this particular day, but not for what will be needed the following day. For the sake of sick person, it's permissible under all circumstances if a non-Jew cannot easily be found to do it. So you make someone else sin in that case. Nonsense. On the Sabbath, it's forbidden to make a musical sound, either with an instrument or with the limbs of the body, except the mouth. It is even forbidden to snap the fingers or to strike on a board to make a sound or to rattle with nuts or ring a bell to silence a crying child. It is forbidden to clap the hands or to dance, but it is permissible to do so in honor of Torah. Now, how do you decide? See. Neither should a person be prevented from doing it for the sake of a crying child, since there are some authorities who permit it. The making of unmusical sounds on the Sabbath is permitted. One may, therefore, knock on a door to make his presence known. Well. Hallelujah for that liberty. Some authorities hold that this too, nevertheless, forbidden to knock on the door with anything attached to it for that the purpose, or to ring the doorbell attached to the door. Clocks that are made to strike the hour by means of pulling a chain may likewise not be operated on the Sabbath or on a festival. Now, let's read some more here. This goes on and on and on and on. You see, God made the Sabbath day so that he will fellowship with his people and his people with him, not all of these silly added laws which indeed reject the commandments of God. One who is fettered with chains may walk out with them on the Sabbath. Is he escaping jail? You know, it makes you wonder what they have in mind here. It is forbidden to walk out on stilts, long poles to which there is a place for the feet, and by means of which people walk in mud or water. You cannot do that. When walking in a place of mud or clay, one may raise one's clothes slightly so as not to soil them, but he may not raise them too high, lest it is breaking some other law. Now here's really a funny one. Bald-headed persons who put on their heads a toupee of comb, flax, or wool, that tells you, you know, how old these laws are, to look like hair, may walk out with it on the Sabbath in a public premise because it is considered an ornament, provided that it was prepared before the Sabbath. If a fire breaks out on the Sabbath, now you think about this now. If, God forbid, a fire breaks out on the Sabbath, our rabbis, blessed memory, who's fearful that if the owner of the house and the members of the family were to engage in saving what they can, they might forget that it is Sabbath and extinguish the fire due to their being excited and frightened at the prospect of losing their property. Well, that's only natural. God did not intend you to burn down your house on the Sabbath if there's a fire. What if you have a wreck in your car going to Sabbath services and you're bleeding to death? Do you tell the ambulance attendants, don't take me? You're oozing blood on the Sabbath? Don't lift me, it's a burden. Well, you're going to die, sir? Then let me lie here and die. See, that's all against God. I tell you, it's amazing. They therefore decreed that the owner is forbidden to save even those articles which may be handled and carried out into a place where it is permissible to remove them. Only that which is required for the need of the day may be saved. Now, with a fire blazing in your house, how are you going to figure that out? If the fire breaks out on Friday evening before the meal, we may save food for three meals and also food for the animals. But if it occurs Sabbath morning, we may save food for two meals. And if it occurs in the afternoon, we may save for only one meal. Continuing now, if one vessel contains food, like many loaves of bread, or a full barrel of wine, since it can be taken out at one time, it's permissible to do so. If we spread out a sheet and put therein large quantities of food and drink, it is likewise permissible to take it out. We are also allowed to take out all the vessels that we need for that day. One may say to others, come and save anything you can for yourselves, and everyone may save the food which he needs, or one vessel that contains even much food. Whatever they save belongs to them, since the owner renounced his ownership, and thus they take possession of abandoned property while a fire is going on. Can you imagine that? Huh. Boy, don't let the rioters know this. I mean, that gives them license to steal everything under the sun. Start a fire in the building, break the windows, and go in and rescue it and take it because the owner now has abandoned right and title to it. Now, nevertheless, if they are God-fearing people, they should restore to the owner whatever they save, since they are aware that he has not abandoned it with his goodwill, and they are allowed to receive compensation for saving it. So they have to come and buy it back, their own stuff, because someone saved it. This is nonsense. No love, no charity, no help, no understanding. This is a burden. The houses in which there is no fire but are close to the fire and the owners fear that they may spread to them are not allowed to save anything and bring it to a place which it may be carried, since they are not so excited. Some authorities hold that money and other valuables, although they may not be handled on the Sabbath, may be saved from great sudden loss, such as a fire, flood, or robbery, by placing them in some edibles and carrying them out together. In other words, take all your money, take all your jewels, put it in a basket with bread, then you can take it out. But woe be to you if you put it on, or woe be to you if you put it in your pocket, or woe be to you if you put it in your purse and carry it out, because you are going against the law of Judaism. Now do you understand what Jesus said? Now do you understand why Paul was so upset with this thing back in Acts the 15th chapter? Yes. All sacred books, whether written or permitted or printed, may be saved from fire or flood on the Sabbath. Okay? Then we have one, bathing on the Sabbath. This is great. One is forbidden to wash his whole body or even the greater part of the body in warm water, even if the water has been warm before the Sabbath. It is forbidden, even if he washes the body a small part at a time. It is forbidden to enter a bathhouse for the purpose of perspiring there. It is, however, permissible to wash one's face and bathe one's feet with water made warm before the Sabbath. It is permissible, listen to this, to wash the entire body with water that flows warm from its original source, such as the hot springs of Tiberias. Now, this tells us how old these laws are, going right back to the times of Jesus Christ, right? If the water is on the ground and the place is not covered with a roof. However, now you've got to stop and think of all these things. Warm water, is it covered with a roof? Is it standing on a garden? Is it naturally flowing there? Do I dare wash myself? However, if the water is in a receptacle or if the place is covered by the roof, it is forbidden. It is permissible to immerse the whole body in cold water. But one must not therefore stand in front of a hot oven to warm up, for it would be like washing with warm water. Now, how's that for stupidity? Even if one has washed only the hands in cold water, one is not allowed to warm them over an oven while they're still wet. And you can't rinse them on a cloth because you might put water in it and you might wring it out. So stand there and freeze, because it's equivalent to washing with water that has been warmed up today with that, which even one limb of the body could not be washed, but one must first dry them well. A brother must be careful not to squeeze the water from his hair. He must likewise refrain from swimming, because swimming on the Sabbath and festivals are forbidden. It is also forbidden to make anything float, such as chips of wood. What a terrible crime that is. Then it talks about resting on the Sabbath. It talks about things forbidden to handle on the Sabbath, vessels on the Sabbath, concerning the base for things on the Sabbath, things you cannot do on the Sabbath. Here it is. On the Sabbath, one is forbidden to walk to the end of the Sabbath boundary or even the lesser distance. He must wait there until dark in order to complete his journey sooner at the conclusion of the Sabbath. This is nonsense. This is what it means. The Pharisees' interpretation of the law of Moses. Now, I know I took a great deal of time to read these, but there are thousands of these. Let me give you the phone number again. The Hebrew Publishing Company in Rockaway Beach, New York. The telephone number is 718-945-3000. And you can order your own. I think that will help you understand what works of law really are.